Hello. Well, welcome once again to At the Table with Gail with Coast Access Radio. So if you're standing there scratching your head and wondering what on earth you can cook tonight, well, we may have a solution for you from the recipe books of Coast Access Radio's very own Fanny Craddock. It's Gail Hall once again. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. And hello, everybody. Well, I'm just going to say, Peter, you're back again. So you must have done everything right. So it's great to have you back.
Well, it was a bit nerve-wracking, Gail, as you know. Would I pass the test, the Catherine Scullin test? And apparently I have, so here we are at least for one more week.
That's great. Well, this could do for a meal tonight or any other time, Peter. And it's lemon and herb meatballs. And they look beautiful in the illustration, so I'm going to crank on ahead with the recipe. 600 grams of lamb or beef mince, and looking at a little footnote on this recipe, it said that the person who wrote this said preferred the lamb mince. So, but anyway, it's your choice. 2 spring onions finely chopped, a handful of fresh herbs, and that includes parsley, coriander, dill, and the finely chopped zest of 1 lemon. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of ground allspice or mixed spice, salt and cracked pepper, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, plus extra for rolling. Now that might sound weird, but it is extra for rolling, and that means putting it on your hands. 2 garlic cloves chopped, and a 400 gram can of chopped tomatoes or equivalent in tomato passata, 1 teaspoon of honey, and a pinch of cinnamon, and 1/2 a cup of plain yogurt seasoned with salt to serve. So there you are.
Can I just ask a question there? You said 1/2 a teaspoonful of ground allspice or mixed spice.
That's correct.
I've always got the impression they're totally different things.
They are, and I wondered that too, Peter, to be quite honest. I saw them allspice as sort of what I would term on the savoury side, allspice, or for pickling or something like that, and mixed spice I actually put in a fruit cake this morning. So I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I used to make pork pies, and I used to get mixed up between the two. And one of them, I can't remember even now, whether it was allspice or mixed spice, was the one to use and not the other one.
Oh, well, I would say maybe allspice. I'd go with you with that because, as I said, I just put mixed spice in a fruitcake this morning. So whether that's anything to do with just, well, what doesn't even really sweeten it, does it? It's just quite different. So let's just, shall we stick with allspice?
Stick with allspice.
For what we know.
Let's
yeah, exactly. That. So basically, we've settled that matter. And now for the method, what we're going to do is break the mince into smaller chunks and place in a mixing bowl. Add the prepared spring onion, herbs, lemon zest, spice, 1/2 a teaspoon of the salt and cracked pepper, and mix to combine. Now, it's very important that you don't overwork the mixture, because normally when I make my meatballs, I don't know whether you make them, Peter, but I put them in the my Kenwood, and I just turn on the switch, and I just let it rip. And of course, they do really mix, but this you don't. Just don't overwork it. Maybe just do it with a large spoon or something like that. And when it's actually clinging together, that's enough. Because apparently it makes them tough.
I made meatballs last night, but I used old recipe of using Italian sausages, and I just get my hands in. I like the squeezing it through my fingers.
Oh, so the Italian sausage, you have to take the skin off, etc.
Yeah, yeah, and reduce the sausages to a
pulp.
Well,
virtually. So do you mix mints with that, or are you just using these?
No, just use the
because sausage. That has enough flavour in itself.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Do you Dead run easy. Your sausage under the cold water to get the skin off? Is that my little tip?
No, they peel off quite happily.
Oh, do they?
Slit down the side of the knife
peel
off.
Yeah. Well, I do that with, you know, sort of like ordinary sausages, not flash ones like that. And I run it under water, sharp knife down the side, and it just peels off.
There you go.
That's when I can't find sausage meat, when I'm desperate. But anyway, as we were just saying, you know, just be careful with the mixing, because they can be tough if they've sort of too mutilated, I suppose you could call that. Drizzle a plate with olive oil, and using lightly oiled hands. Now that's where the extra oil comes in, because then they're not sticking to your hands. So you're actually working the meat mixture in your hands, and sort of like walnut size balls and place on the plate. Cover and chill for 30 to 60 minutes. The meatballs, they tell me, can be cooked straight away if required, but the flavours that we've got in these, it's better to just let them rest for a while. So that's, you know, if you've got time, please do that. You know, half an hour, 40 minutes is not much time. When ready to cook the meatballs, heat a frying pan over a moderate heat. Add 1 tablespoon of olive oil to the pan, and once shimmering, I suppose that's a new word, a shimmering, the oil is shimmering, you add the meatballs. Cook, shaking the pan periodically until the meatballs are evenly browned, and using a slotted spoon to transfer the meatballs to a plate and keep warm. Add the remaining olive oil to the pan along with the garlic. Cook for 1 minute until fragrant, but don't let it burn. Add the tomatoes along with the honey, cinnamon, and a pinch of salt, and simmer gently for maybe 10 minutes because it thickens up. And return the meatballs to the pan and toss to coat in the sauce. Sounds lovely. This might be your next recipe, Peter, I think. Cook for another 8 to 10 minutes until the meatballs are cooked through. And garnish if you want to with extra lemon zest and serve with turmeric rice, which incidentally is going to be our next recipe.
Oh, well, there's a coincidence.
Yeah, because I thought we could marry them up together.
Very nice. Well, that's a super thought. And they sound, yes, you're right. I think I'm going to have a go at those. And I would use lamb mince myself.
Yeah, well, exactly. I was thinking that when I found this recipe. I thought that would be my choice too, lamb mince.
Well, with a bit of luck, I'll report back to you in a week or two.
Oh, okay. That'd be great, Peter. You could be still on the program.
Oh, I might not be on the program.
Anyway, we're going to do this turmeric rice with broad beans. Now, I never used to like broad beans, did you?
I've always quite liked them, I must admit.
Oh, right. Well, I've grown to like them, actually, and I think it's probably all in the cooking.
My wife hates them.
Oh, okay. So you don't eat them very often. No. Well, not much point, is it?
No.
Broad beans for one. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to start off with 1 cup of white basmati rice, rinsed, it's important to rinse it, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 spring onions, 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric, 1.5 cups of hot stock or water, I would prefer stock because it's just another addition of flavour, for me that is, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of potted broad beans, juice of 1/2 lemon, and here we go again, a handful of fresh herbs, parsley, mint, coriander, and dill, all finely chopped, or just, you know, put in a chopper, get a big sharp knife on the board, across the board, and that sort of chops it all up. The method of this is place the rice in a sieve and rinse well in cold water and set over a bowl to drain while cooking the onions. Heat a medium saucepan over a moderate heat. Add the oil and onion and sauté for 5 minutes or longer if you're using any other type of onion, but at the moment we're talking about spring onions until it's softened. Add the turmeric along with the drained rice and stir over the heat for 1 minute. Add the stock or water and salt, cover and bring to a simmer and cook for at least 10 to 12 minutes just until the rice has absorbed the liquid. So that's what you're doing there. Usually when the rice has absorbed the liquid, it's sort of like it's ready, just about ready. But just make sure, do the finger test. If it sort of squashes a little bit in your finger, that means it's cooked. Meanwhile, bring a small saucepan of water to a boil and add the broad beans and cook for 2 minutes, then drain and refresh in cold water. Now, you might want to think, well, what do you run them under the cold water for? Because you've just taken them off the heat. But they keep their colour. You know, it's a good thing for when you're doing something that's really got a lovely green. If you're taking them off the heat, you know, just put them under that cold water and it retains that beautiful colour. But also, slip off the thicker grey skins and discard. So you've got that little film around them, haven't you, if you can remember, Peter?
Mm.
And I haven't actually cooked broad beans for a long time. And then have your beans at the ready for to go in the ditch. Once the rice is cooked, remove from heat, quickly sprinkle the prepared broad beans on top of the rice, cover again and leave to steam for 6 to 8 minutes. So the broad beans are sitting on top of your rice and they'll just, you know, just cook a little bit more. Then add the lemon juice and the herbs and fluff the rice. I love it when it gets all fluffed up. 2 forks in a bowl, fluff it up and combine all that together. Check the taste, you know, because you want it well seasoned. Add extra lemon juice if needed. And there you are. That goes with our previous recipe, the lemon and herb meatballs. I think that's what they were called. That's right, lemon and herb meatballs. This is married up together.
It sounds like a good idea. And I think anything you can do with rice, just to make it a little bit different to rice,
yes,
it's a good idea, isn't it?
It is a good idea. Yes, definitely. Oh, you can always put all sorts of flavours, really, in just boiled rice, can't you?
Yeah. Are broad beans the same as butter beans?
No, because butter beans are yellow and long.
Mm.
Broad beans are broad.
Mm.
That's why they're called broad beans, I think.
Right.
And they're sort of like, knuckle bones? No, not quite.
No, like kidney shaped, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, kidney shaped. And nice little solid, chubby ones.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But the other ones are yellow, yeah, which are nice too as well. So that's our first part today, Peter. Lovely savoury dish.
Right, and we're racking our brains to find a bit of music for you today.
Yes.
And, well, Gail suggested, there was a group called The Herbs.
That's right,
so
yes.
We're going to see if we can find a suitable track from The Herbs.
Yeah.
And here it is.
Long ago.
Well, that was yummy, Gail. I've finished my meatballs and I've finished my rice. I did enjoy the broad beans. Lovely. Yum, yum. Now I'm ready for something sweet.
Right. Well, this is your dessert. And actually, it makes a little point that these double chocolate treats would make a lovely gift if you wrap them up in a bit of cellophane or something like that, irresistible. But it's chocolate cashew brownies. Now, we're starting off with sweetened condensed milk, and that's 300 mils. Half a cup of margarine or butter, half a cup of cocoa, and please sift it because, you know, cocoa tends to be a bit lumpy. So please do sift the cocoa. Half a cup of milk, 3/4 of a cup of brown sugar, and that's packed, 2/3 of a cup of plain flour, and just 1/4 teaspoon of salt. It's a couple of shakes, really. That would be me anyway, just doot-doot with the salt shaker. And 2 large eggs, and that's just get a fork and lightly beat them. 196 grams, which is an unusual amount. Wouldn't matter if you put 200, for example, or even 220 of chocolate chopped, and 1/2 cup of coarsely chopped raw cashews. Now, if you want to toast that, they're toasted because toasted is different to just having them raw. So you can actually roast those probably for about 10 minutes at 180 or something like that. Roast those in a pan in your oven and let them go cold, of course. So that's how you can do that. Now, the method is heat and stir the first 4 ingredients in a medium saucepan. So we're looking at the condensed milk, the margarine or butter, the cocoa and the milk. Okay, that's your first 4 ingredients. Put them in a medium saucepan on medium low for about 5 minutes until the margarine or butter is melted. Okay, so that won't really take that long. And then remove from the heat. Combine the brown sugar, flour and salt in a small bowl. Add to the milk mixture, then add the egg and stir until smooth, and you're cooling that off. You know, this is how simple it is. Then you're adding the chocolate, your 196 grams and maybe 30 grams extra, and the cashews. Now, mix well. Now, if you've got I'm sure you have a slice tin, actually cover that with foil and just overlap the foil at each end or the sides or whichever so that you can actually pull it out on that. Now grease the foil with cooking spray, just give it a good spray, and then spread the mixture evenly in the pan. Please don't forget to spray it because if you don't, the foil will probably stick to the cashew brownie.
Do you put the foil a particular way around? Shiny side or dull side?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Well, I usually put...
Well, I'll tell you now, it doesn't matter.
Oh, right.
But I came across this somewhere else recently and somebody asked the question, and I've often looked, should I put the shiny side up or down? It doesn't matter.
Oh.
Forgive me for interrupting.
No, but that's good because I've never really thought about that. I mean, I see
there.
2 sides and I suppose I always stick a little bit to the shiny side. I don't know why.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But anyway, having brought that up, Peter, I think, personally myself, I think I'd probably use baking paper because you can do the same sort of thing and then you can guarantee, really, that the brownie won't stick. So
I think it's a good idea.
I think so too. And then overlap that and you can actually pull that out as well. But this says foil. I don't know why, but some people have preferences. So there you are. So we'll stick with that. But if you do, please spray it anyway. Spread mixture evenly in the pan and bake at 175 degrees Celsius for about 35 minutes until just firm. Now, you need to just make sure that this is not, the finger test, I always say the finger test, it shouldn't be, you know, sort of like if you're putting a cake pick in, it shouldn't come out sort of moist. It should be, you know, sometimes they say brownie is sort of chewy and soft in the middle. So just judge it. But if it's cooking for 35 minutes, I doubt whether it's going to have that anyway. So do not overbake. Do not overbake, please. Then cool and then chill for at least 6 hours or overnight, and then holding the foil or the paper, bring from the pan, discard the foil, and then cut into your squares. And it says you get about 30-something squares out of this, so depending on how big they are. But it, look, I'm going to hold up the illustration because I think this is beautiful, and I'm just going to make Peter's mouth water.
Ooh, they look rather nice, don't they?
They do look rather nice. And yes. I love brownie, but with the cashews toast, the toasted, cashews in it, it just makes it even more tempting.
It would probably be more effective, actually, Gail, if you brought a plate full of the real thing.
Well, I'll see how much time I've got between now and Christmas, Peter. It's actually funny. I just want to mention this, Peter. It says do not overbake. And please don't. Well, I overbaked some ginger crunch because I looked in and I thought, oh, is it cooked? And I thought, oh, no, I'll leave it 2 or 3 minutes. And then I put it in again. I didn't take it out, sorry. But I just looked at it again. I thought, maybe another few minutes. Well, I did, and I took it out. And it wasn't over-browned. Iced it with ginger icing and cut it. But when I went to eat it, it was, I was afraid I might have to pay a visit to the dentist. So basically, I didn't waste it. I crumbed it all up and use it for with crumble and crumbled dessert. So, but.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
Trying to eat it with on its own, too risky. So don't overbake. Right. So
Gail,
we're moving
just
on.
Before we move on from that
right,
one,
right.
Do you have a tip on how. Once you've opened a tin of sweetened condensed milk, you don't eat it all with a spoon before you use it for cooking.
No. Ooh. Well, you can.
Yes, I just eat it straight out
you?
The tin with a spoon. Yeah. And if you put it in the fridge without a piece of the tin on the top, just leave it out, it goes nice and goes sort of crunchy and
it does.
Sort of crystalline.
And do you eat it like that? Oh, my goodness.
It's a long time since I did, but it's delicious stuff.
Oh, my goodness. No, I've never done that. I've never done that. So, no, and I don't think I ever will. But much for me. That's especially the sweetened stuff.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Jolly nice.
Right. Well, after that, we're going to move on to some fruity couscous. So just a nice little accompaniment to have with chicken or whatever, you know, for a meal. And I just thought it was quite nice because it's almost a salad. So we've got 1 cup of couscous, 6 chopped dried apricots, 1 cup of boiling water, 1/2 teaspoon of chicken stock, and that's the powdered stuff, 2 tablespoons of pine nuts, 2 tablespoons of dried currants, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1 lemon, 2 tablespoons of juice from that 1 lemon, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh coriander or mint. Now, looking at this, this is probably one I'm going to try because I think it's simple and it looks nice. Step 1, measure the couscous into a medium-sized bowl. Add the apricots, boiling water and the chicken stock. Stir, cover, then leave to stand for 5 minutes. That's easy. That's easy. Now, what we're going to do is lightly toast the pine nuts in a dry pan. So just get out a little frying pan, put the heat on, and then just dry your pine nuts. Okay, so you can do that. When couscous has soaked up all the liquid, this is how easy couscous is, fluff with a fork, then add the remaining ingredients and stir to combine and season well with salt and pepper. Now, that is easy. You can make that a 1/2 hour before you have people for lunch. It's just fabulous.
That's just easy peasy.
It certainly is. And I love the fact that it's got the currants and the apricots in it. It's a sort of like a fruity dish, but it is a sort of like a salad accompaniment, really, with the couscous.
Very nice. Now, I've got another question for you.
Yes.
And I meant to ask it on the previous one. You refer to stock and chicken stock.
Yes.
Do you have any preferences as to where your chicken stock or stock comes from?
Well, if I'm a good person in the kitchen, Peter, and he's closed his eyes and he's, you know, thinking about this, you know, I could make my own chicken stock, which I have done occasionally, and but I do usually use the commercial one.
Are you allowed to say? Oh, perhaps you're not allowed to say, because there's
well,
all sorts.
I am. You can yeah, put, there I mean, is all sorts, yeah.
There's the ready-made stuff in the cartons.
That's right, yes.
Or there's good old OXO.
Yeah, OXO as well. I love
Bisto
OXO.
And stuff like that. That's just gravy, isn't it, really?
Well, Bisto I don't use, but I do use, if we're using name, OXO and Maggi.
Oh, right, okay. I'm an OXO man myself.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like the OXO cubes. Yeah, no, that's great. Because that's a good measure. One little tiny tinfoil OXO cube can go in, and probably that's sufficient, according to about 1.5 cups of water or something like that. I don't know.
I'm pleased to hear you say that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is good.
Kindred spirit with OXO, I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But I have made my own stock, and basically, you know, that's good too.
Well, it's a, you don't waste the bones of a chicken or anything else. So that's the best part about it.
So how are we going for time,
Well,
Peter?
I think we're absolutely fine, Gail. I think if you've got something that will take about, you've got a good 5-6 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I just had this one as an emergency, Peter, because I thought to myself, you know, sometimes we talk a lot and sometimes we just get on with the job and, you know, make sure our listeners are getting value. But this is a walnut whiz cake and it's very quick. So I'm going to quickly give you the ingredients. 1 cup of caster sugar, 4 tablespoons of plain flour, 1 cup of desiccated coconut, 1/2 cup of chopped walnuts, 2 teaspoons of grated lemon rind, 4 eggs, 1.5 cups of milk, 125 grams of butter melted, and 1 cup of thickened cream whipped. Well, that can be ordinary cream. Whip it yourself. Place the sugar, flour, coconut, walnuts and lemon rind in a food processor and process for 30 seconds. Add the eggs, milk and butter and process for 1 minute longer. Then pour that mixture into a greased and lined flan dish, or a dish that I sort of think would take it. A flan dish, yeah, probably okay. And bake for 45 minutes or until the cake is cooked when tested. So we all know we've got our little tester and your little wee cake tester. Make sure that it is cooked. And there you are. You can serve warm with whipped cream. I just love it because it's serving with whipped cream. That's me. And I love walnuts.
See, I like walnuts as well. Yeah. Put them in anything.
Now, see, Peter, how easy that is?
Oh, but all your stuff is pretty straightforward, Gail.
Well, I try to sort of make it, you know, not hard to do with ingredients that are easy accessible. But on the odd occasion, I sort of throw in one that's, you know, a little bit more complicated and a little bit more fancy.
And if it prompts you to go to the supermarket and look for that spice that you hadn't already got, then that's a good thing, isn't it?
It is a good thing. Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, yeah, if you look at a recipe and think, well, I haven't got that, I can't be bothered.
No, well, that's right. And I think you should have a little sample of spice. The only thing with mine, Peter, I've got them in a box, you know, and I've got all my spices. So if I want a spice, I think, now, where did I put that spice when I last used it? Did I put it to the back or did I put it to the front? And then I'm going like this in the, I'm doing a demonstration here. I'm lifting up all the boxes in the wooden box to see which spice I want. So not a very good method.
You haven't got a spice wheel then or anything like that?
No, I haven't got anything
like what
exciting
we used to have.
Like that.
No. It used to be a regular wedding present at in my youth when...
A spice wheel.
Or spices, or a spice rack.
And a spice rack,
my first
yes.
wife didn't know what to do with the spice anyway, so somebody gave us a spice rack. I didn't know what to do with that. Anyway, we're anyway, Babylon too much.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's great.
Gail, that's it then. You've done another grand selection of recipes there. I was going to say, I mentioned at the beginning Fanny Craddock.
Oh, yes.
Well, of course, Fanny Craddock was the very first, I believe, cook on the television.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah,
in New Zealand or Britain?
Oh, in Britain.
Oh, of course.
With husband Johnny lurking in the background. He was the dog's body. Oh. Fanny Craddock was an over-the-top lady. She was a phenomenal character. And I was thinking, yes, of course, in those days, it was all black and white, you see.
Yes, it was.
And I thought, gosh, that's difficult. Then I thought, poor Gail does it all invisible.
Well, the listeners can't see me working my hands here, Peter, while I'm talking to you.
Gail, once again, we are heavily indebted to you in Coast Access.
I love
Radio,
it.
Giving us your time and your bright ideas on cooking. So looking forward to the next time. Who will be sitting here? Will it be me or will it be Catherine?
Well, who knows? Let's keep the listeners, you know, waiting and wondering.
Yes.
Okay,
come
thank
back
you.
Next week. Okay,
okay,
Gail. Bye for now.
Bye.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.